You are listening to the African Life Podcast with Agbo Uwabo. Each show, I will cover topics such as African culture, lifestyle, and politics from both home and away. To interact with the show, email studio@redshiftonline.org. This is Agbo Uwabo, your regular host, The African Life. With me today is Mrs. Sarah Oko to discuss about African marriage right. You are welcome, Mrs. Oko.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Please, could you tell us more about yourself?
My name is Sarah Oko, and I'm from Nigeria precisely. I'm a student right now, a full-time student of University of Wolverhampton.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Oko. Our topic, as you said, is the African marriage right. Could you tell us more about marriage right? We can narrow it down now to Nigeria.
Oh, all right. So marriage is a very good occasion. You know, people like to celebrate in Nigeria. People love to celebrate in Nigeria, and marriage is one of those occasions where they come out in their whole fanfare and bring the whole partying spirit in them out. But talking about marriage rights in Nigeria, Nigeria has got lots of tribes and ethnic groups, and for every tribe, they have a peculiar way they perform their marriage rites. For the purpose of time, I will just narrow it down to the eastern part of Nigeria and the southern part of Nigeria.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Oko. Are you from the eastern part or the southern part of Nigeria? Because I can see that you are trying to narrow the marriage rite to these two regions.
I'm from the southern part of Nigeria. I am actually from Delta State, the northern part of Delta. We are actually called, referred to as Delta North.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Oko. So if you could take us through the steps involved in this marriage rite.
Well, getting married is an exciting thing in the life of a bride and a groom. But back there, it's not just about the bride and the groom. In fact, it's about both families. If you're not careful, both the bride and the groom will be sidelined. You know, during the time of our fathers, actually, these two people, the bride and the groom, have no say. All they have to do is present themselves. Both family get everything arranged. But now, you know, things have moved on, and you caught a girl, you fall in love, you propose to her. When she accepts, then that is where the main step begins. First and foremost, the intended groom, and this goes for both the southern part of Nigeria and the eastern part, although at a point, they begin to, you know, deviate as culture comes into play. But the first stages are always the same for these two parts of Nigeria. The first thing that the groom have to do is to go to the bride's family after the bride have accepted his proposals, and then he goes to the bride's family with an elder in his family. At this stage, it's usually his father. If he doesn't have a father, the eldest uncle in the family goes with him to the girl's house, and they call this knocking on the door. When he goes there, he lets the bride's family know his intentions towards their daughter. And before he goes there, the bride must have told her parents about the groom, and that he will be coming with his father, so he's actually expected. And then when he goes on this first stage, when he gets to the bride's house, he introduces himself, and he's usually asked about the family where he's coming from, the part of the country where he's coming from, and it's usually just at that, and he declares his intention. The bride's family, parents, we ask the would-be groom to go home, and they will communicate with him on the later day that he can come back with his family while they discuss with their daughter. At this point, there is no positive or negative answer given to the groom.
Thank you very much. We could see that there's a lot to learn about the steps. I believe that is just the first part of it, if not mistaken. I would still want you to go down, give us more details, because we want to know now you've given us the first step. Give us more details until the whole marriage is completed.
All right. After the groom-to-be lives with his father, he goes home and the bride's parents sit her down to ask how well she knows the groom. And if they are satisfied with what she tells them, they then communicate to the groom to come with his family for what we call introduction. That is the proper step, the stage where both families are actually allowed to know each other. But if the parents of the bride are not satisfied with what the bride tells them, they then ask the groom to come back with maybe another one or two elders in his family. And then they discuss with these elders and ask them to go. When they at this point, they're still not giving any positive or negative answer. When they leave, usually the parents of the bride will go and conduct a search. They will make a research about the groom's family to know where their daughter is going into. And it goes both ways, actually. Sometimes the groom's family, we also want to know more about the bride's family to know who they are accepting into their family. Because in that part of the country, marriage is not seen as being between the bride and the groom. It's actually uniting both families. And before these two families come together, they will want to know more about each other to know if this is a name they want to attach to their own family. And at this point, if they are satisfied, they communicate to the would-be groom's family and ask them to come for proper introduction. And this is actually a mini celebration where the groom comes in with his whole family. I'm not talking of just his parents and his siblings. I'm talking about both his extended family, his uncles, and then the bride family assembles their own family as well, her parents, her uncles. She communicates to her maternal family. Everybody will have to be present as both families are properly introduced to each other. And at this stage, it is assumed that the marriage rite has properly begun. And then what is expected of the bride is to, at the end, when everything is finalized, to be actually married to the groom. But that does not mean that at this point she still cannot change her mind. The door is still very open for her to change her mind at any given point in time. Then proceeding from this stage, the groom is usually given a list. We call it your dowry list. Some people call it the bride price list. And on this list, you find a lot of things. Like I said, depends on the part of the country where you come from. There are some parts in Nigeria, especially the eastern part, their list can go on and on and on. And, you know, it's divided into sections. You have the section for omonas, that is the bride's kinsmen. You have a section for omwada, that is the bride's kinswomen. And then you have the father of the bride, you have the mother of the bride, you have the siblings of the bride. And all these sections have specifically what you are expected to bring to appeal to that particular group, to allow you to take their sister, their daughter with you. And it's a way of showing that you are going to take care of their daughter when she goes with you.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I can see that you are actually giving us more details. If you can also mention some of the items that are on the list, whether from the to the mother, to the father, to the community, so that we'll have a little bit of an idea from what is written on this list.
Thank you for that question. When the list is given to the groom, that is, like I said, you begin to find cultural differences. Like in the southern part of Nigeria, where I come from, the bride is not allowed to see her list, except the groom shows it to you, which is done in secret. It is assumed you don't know what is being asked in exchange for your hand in marriage. And then on this list, first and foremost, for the kinsmen, that is the eastern part, they call them the omonas. For those people, you must have at least gin and kola nut, as that is used to pray for the bride and the groom. Those items must be on the list for the omonas. Then, proceeding from there to the omuadas, that's the bride's kinswomen. You must have a bag of salt. That is the most essential item that is firstly written for the omuadas, because it is assumed that salt adds taste to whatever you're cooking. And that salt and palm oil that is on the list for the omuadas is used to say prayers for the girl, for the bride and the groom. So those are the items for the umunna and the umuadas that you must come with. You know, because when the list is given to you, actually you can negotiate the list. Sometimes some things are taken out, and sometimes some things are just reduced. But for these items, you must present them. And then proceeding to the father's list. On the father's list, you must come with a walking stick for the father. The irrespective of the man's age, it is expected that it's a sign of respect, telling him that he will grow to a ripe old age. And then on the mother's list, you must at least come with a wrapper for her, either Hollandaise or George, for the mother of the bride. That is to say, thank you for bringing her up, because back home in Africa, mothers are known to carry their children on their back. That is like telling the mother of the bride, oh, I'm replacing some of the wrappers you used in carrying my wife when she was little. And then to the siblings, you must come with tubers of yam for the siblings. That is to say, oh, I can feed your sister. It's not like you're telling them you're replacing some of the food she ate, but it's a symbol to show that you can actually feed their sister. And then general list, there are things that you cannot omit. One, both for the eastern part and the delta north, is a goat, a male goat. But these days, some people exchange, instead of bringing a goat, they bring the equivalent in money for the bride's family. That's the general part. And then you must come with palm wine. No marriage rites. And palm wine is a local brew. Palm wine is a local brew. You must come with it. No marriage rite is performed without palm wine. Because when at the end of the whole thing, when the bride accepts the groom, a cup of palm wine is given to her, prayed over by the eldest person in the bride's family, and she is asked to present that cup to her husband. Once the man sips from it, that cements the marriage traditionally. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sarah. With your explanation, I have a question to ask. Is it possible for marriage rites to be conducted without the bride and the groom being there? Because based on your explanation now, you are making us to understand that the man will have to accept the cup of wine from the woman. Is it possible for the marriage to be conducted without these two people being present?
Yes and no. The reason why I said yes and no is because if the groom and the bride are not present, there must be someone to represent the groom, because the bride's family want to know who actually is taking their daughter away from them. If the groom, maybe due to distance or circumstances, cannot be present there, usually if he has a brother, because the culture back home is not like you're, like I said earlier, you're not married to just your husband. When a bride is taken, it is assumed she's married to the whole family. And if the groom is not present, actually somebody can stand in his stead, I mean in his place, and then receive all the rights on behalf of the groom. And then when the whole thing is done, the bride is now presented to the groom at a convenient time.
Thank you very much. With your explanation, if you can still tell us more about who actually is the lady presented to. Is it to the man or to the man's family?
When the whole rite has been performed, the lady is not presented to the groom. The lady is presented to the eldest person in the groom's family, or rather I would say the eldest person present where the rite is being performed, because that person is assumed to oversee the marriage. He is expected to make sure that nothing goes wrong in the marriage, to guide the marriage with his wisdom, to advise the bride and the groom, as they are seen as, you know, very young and can easily make mistakes. So there should be an elder to guide them. And that is why in the days of our fathers, when a new bride is taken, she usually doesn't just move in with her husband. Sometimes she's expected to live with her mother-in-law for some time to learn the intricacies in marriage.
Thank you very much. One other thing I noticed is that in Nigeria, to be precise, we find out that, as you mentioned the marriage rite, we find out that we also carry out the Christian marriage. So if you can explain to us the difference, or which one comes first, or if the two are necessary.
Thank you. Because actually I had this conversation with a friend of mine, and we were just talking about it. Back home in Nigeria, the actual marriage that is recognized is the traditional marriage. Although these days people go ahead to have what we call the white wedding. And then if you're not a Christian, you're a Muslim, they still have their own celebration. And if both are maybe they have different religions, the girl is a Christian or the boy is a Christian and the other spouse is not, they go ahead to registry. They go ahead for court marriages, but these ones are not recognized by the kinsmen. And there's no way you are going to perform any of this Christian wedding or white wedding without the traditional rites being performed. If a bride's family have not collected her bride price, it is assumed she is not married. And that is why there's also a traditional divorce. When you get married and along the line, you know, maybe you cannot continue with the marriage due to circumstances or issues, the way we divorce traditionally, that dowry that was paid has to be returned back to the groom's family before the bride can be given back to her family.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I can see that you are fully deep into this African marriage. Looking at today's children, what advice do you have for them regarding African marriage?
You know that things are fast changing. Even the way we perform the marriage right now, actually, is not the way our parents performed it. It's not as strict as it used to be then. A lot of leniency, you know, and a lot of should I say modernization has come into the way that traditional marriage rites are carried out. What I would like to say to the upcoming generation is they should look into what their parents are doing now and then inculcate it into their own lives, and you know, try to keep that tradition alive. Like I always say to my husband, even if we are here, when it's time for my children to get married, if they're getting married here or back home, I would love to have the traditional rites carried out, because to me that means they are properly married.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I can see that we are almost running out of time. It shows that you've not actually finished the explanation, the step-by-step regarding this African rite marriage. If you can give us share more light on it.
Thank you. Like I said when we started, that I'm going to be constrained with time, because there are lots of steps in performing the marriage rites. Like for instance, I omitted a step earlier. When a bride is being given away in marriage, her maternal family actually has a role to play. There's no way you're going to give any bride away without her mother's family actively playing a role. There are some things we call obuno. That is, when a bride gets married, it's assumed that she's going into a fresh house. She's building a fresh home. There are things given to her to help ease her into marriage life. For instance, it's expected that her maternal family, they are going to provide her with the essentials to start up a home, like kitchen utensils. You know, some go as far these days as buying sewing machines, washing machines for the bride, things that will ease the life of the bride and groom in the early stage of their marriage. Like when I got married, even when they were not necessary, I received, even there's something we call mortar. Is used to pound pepper, is used to pound yam, cassava dough, and then I got all those, the grinding stone. If you don't want to pound your pepper, you use it to grind your pepper. I received it, and till today I didn't even use it, but it's because it's tradition, and it's expected for me to receive those things from my maternal family. It was made available to me.
Thank you very much, Sarah. As we are coming to an end to the program, I won't forget to always ask my favorite question. During your marriage, what particular food did you eat?
In fact, my marriage, I don't see eye chopo. Sorry. When I got married, I was so excited. The activities, the fanfare, I can't remember what I even ate. But I think after the whole process, when I was escorted back to my with the groom's family, I finally had jollof rice, because there's no ceremony complete in Nigeria that you don't have party jollof rice. Not just jollof rice, party jollof rice.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Thank you for having more time to share with us about the African marriage rite. We hope that when we call upon you next time, you will be chance to also take one or two topics from us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was actually my pleasure to be here. And then going down the memory lane of getting married, I hope to see this tradition upheld for more generations to come. Thank you.
You are listening to the African Life Podcast with Agbo Uwabo. Each show, I will cover topics such as African culture, lifestyle, and politics from both home and away. To interact with the show, email studio@redshiftonline.org.